Today we are reading from Canto 4, Chapter 4. Chapter 4 is entitled Sati Quits Her Body. And today we are on verse 16. Kimva Shiva Kyama Shivam Navidus Twadanye.
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 Brahma Dayastam Avakirya Jatas Mashane. Brahmadayastamavakirya jatasmashane. Tanmalya bhasma nikapali avasat pishaher. Tanmalya bhasma nikapali avasat pishacher. Ye murdha bhir dadhati charana vrashishtham. Ye murdha bhir dadhati charana vrashishtham. Kimba, whether Shiva Akyam, named Shiva, Ashivam, inauspicious. Navidu, do not know. Tvat anye, other than you. Brahma adayaha, Brahma and others. Tam, him, Lord Shiva. Avakirya, scattered. Jatha, having twisted hair. Smashane, in the crematorium. Tatmalya bhasma nrikapali. Who is garlanded with human skulls and smeared with ashes? Avasat, associated. Pishache, with demons. Ye, who? Murdabhi, with the head. Dadhati, place. Tat charana avashrishtam, fallen from his lotus feet. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Do you think that greater, more respectable personalities than you, such as Lord Brahma, do not know this inauspicious person who goes under the name Lord Shiva? He associates with the demons in the crematorium. His locks of hair are scattered all over his body. He is garlanded with human skulls and smeared with ashes from the crematorium. But in spite of all these inauspicious qualities, great personalities like Lord Brahma honor him by accepting the flowers offered to his lotus feet and placing them with great respect on their heads. The purport is very long, so we'll just read first paragraph. Purport. It is useless to condemn a great personality like Lord Shiva, and this is being stated by his wife Sati, to establish the supremacy of her husband. First she said, you call Lord Shiva inauspicious because he associates with demons in crematoriums, covers his body with the ashes of the dead, and garlands himself with the skulls of human beings. You have shown so many defects, but you do not know that his position is always transcendental. Although he appears inauspicious, why do personalities like Brahma respect the dust of his lotus feet and place on their heads with great respect those very garlands which are condemned by you? Since Sati was a chaste woman and the wife of Lord Shiva, it was her duty to establish the elevated position of Lord Shiva, not only by sentiment but by facts. Lord Shiva is not an ordinary living entity. This is the conclusion of Vedic scriptures. He is neither on the level of the Supreme Personality of Godhead nor on the level of ordinary living entities. Brahma is an almost, in almost all cases, an ordinary living entity. Sometimes, when there is no ordinary living entity available, the post of Brahma is occupied by an expansion of Lord Vishnu. But generally, this post is occupied by a greatly pious living entity within this universe. Thus, Lord Shiva's position is constitutionally higher than that of Lord Brahma, although Lord Shiva appeared as the son of Brahma. Here it is mentioned that even personalities like Brahma accept the so-called inauspicious flowers and the dust of lotus feet of Lord Shiva. Great sages like Maharishi, Atri, Bhrigu and others, among the nine great sages who are descendants of Brahma, also respect Lord Shiva in such a way because they all know that Lord Shiva is not an ordinary living entity. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sva Padantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyayvacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Rama Rama Hare Hare. So we are continuing the conversation which Sati is having with her father. This chapter is entitled Sati Quits Her Body. So we heard in the previous classes how Sati has come actually against Lord Shiva's wishes to attend the yajna which her father had organized. And Lord Shiva had warned her that don't go for the sacrifice because your father does not have any respect for me and you will feel very shattered when you go there. So he gave her a forewarning, but Sati actually wanted to come. She was feeling very distressed that she was in that dilemma whether to come or not to come. And ultimately she decides to come. And when she comes here to the assembly which her father has organized, just her mother and her sisters welcome her nicely. But her father does not even pay attention to her, neither does he smile or give her a warm welcome. And Sati sees that even in the sacrifice which her father has organized, there were no oblations being offered to her husband, Lord Shiva. So seeing all this, Sati actually recognized that yes, what Lord Shiva had warned me is true. My husband is not being respected in this assembly and my father is still harboring those ill feelings which had started a few chapters ago. So then she starts having a conversation with her father and she is actually chastising and blaspheming her father for not recognizing the exalted position of Lord Shiva. So in the previous few verses and even in this verse, we are continuing to hear that she is trying to establish that Lord Shiva is not an ordinary living entity, like her father is concluding based on his external appearance. She is telling her father, not like Prabhupada is saying in the purport, not just through sentiments, like, you know, wives generally are very protective of their husbands. A chaste wife does not like to hear if somebody is blaspheming her husband or saying anything bad about her husband. So generally a chaste wife has these feelings. If somebody says something, the wife will revolt or retort and not allow that blasphemous things to be said. But in this particular case, Sati is not just establishing by sentiments, which she obviously has because she is the wife, but she is also establishing by facts from the scriptures and from whatever she has observed and she has also heard. So sentiments and logic, both she is using to actually convince her father about the exalted position of Lord Shiva. So Sati's main purpose, in the second paragraph we will see in the purport, Prabhupada actually explains. So a few verses ago we felt that, you know, when Sati wanted to come for this yajna, she came against her husband's wishes. Now usually a chaste wife and a faithful wife would not go against her husband's wishes. If the husband is saying that I don't think it will be appropriate for you to go, she would generally listen. But in this case, Sati, who is Durga, none other than the keeper of this whole material world, she has apparently gone against her husband's wishes and she has gone for the sacrifice. So Prabhupada explains in the second half of the purport. He says that the purpose of Sati coming for this yajna was not just to, you know, see her relatives and meet her relatives. That is the reason she tells Lord Shiva. But her purpose was to come and establish the position of Lord Shiva. She felt that as the wife of Lord Shiva and as his disciple, it was her duty to establish the exalted position of Lord Shiva and to clear up the misconceptions which her father had about Lord Shiva. So that was one of the main purposes she has come to this yajna, to defend the position of Lord Shiva. But we will see that in spite of all her logic which she gives to her father does not pay heed to whatever Sati is saying. And ultimately Sati gets very angry and disappointed and frustrated. And then she decides to quit her body. So after a few verses, she will self-ignite, like she will ignite a fire within herself and she will burn her body to ashes. Because she tells her father that I do not want to keep this body any longer, which has been given to me by you, who does not respect an exalted person like Lord Shiva. So that will be the conclusion of this chapter, how she quits her body. And then another whole pastime will unfold of how there will be fights happening and a demon will come up and he will come to kill Daksha. So all that pastime will unfold. So in this particular verse, Sati is establishing the position. So Lord Shiva is not an ordinary living entity, nor is he on the position of demigods. He is much higher than them. So he is neither a Jiva Tattva, but nor is he a Vishnu Tattva. So he is in between. There is a unique position which Lord Shiva has, which is called as Shiva Tattva. And in the Brahma Samhita we see, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains the position of Lord Shiva very nicely. He says, Kshiram Yatha Dadati Vishesha Yoga. So he says that Lord Shiva is nothing but milk transformed into curd. So if Krishna is milk, then a transformation of that milk is Lord Shiva. But obviously, the origin of yogurt is always milk. So the origin is always Lord Vishnu. But a transformation of that is Lord Shiva. So he is almost as good as the personality of Godhead. He is not like Brahma. In fact, we see a few chapters ago, like in third canto, we see how Lord Shiva came into this universe. So in the spiritual universe, Lord Shiva has an eternal position and he is called as Sadashiva. So he's an expansion over there of, like we see, the milk transformed into curd. So he's there in his eternal position and there is a Sadashiv Loka also, which is there in the spiritual world. But when he comes to this material world, he actually does the task of assisting the Lord in creating this material world. So when Mahavishnu lies down on the causal ocean which separates the material world and the spiritual world, and he glances at Pradhan, which is non-differentiated matter at that stage, that glance is actually carried by Shambhu. And he then carries that glance and he takes it into Pradhan. And Pradhan is actually none other than a manifestation of Durga. So he's impregnating, he's carrying that glance and he's impregnating Pradhan or Durga into creating, and he's agitating that. And then the entire material universe comes about. The 24 elements come, the three modes of material nature then come about from Mahatattva. And then we see the different universes manifest in this material world. So Lord Shiva is actually one of the earliest living entities after the material world was created, when Lord Vishnu glances at the Pradhan. That is when Lord Shambhu was already there. But in the material world, like, you know, same like Krishna accepts parents and he comes in this material world, in the same way Lord Shiva also accepted a father and he came from between the eyebrows of Lord Brahma and he started crying. So his name in this world is known as Rudra, one who cries. But he is actually the origin of Brahma as well. So just for the purpose of coming into this material world, he is accepting Lord Brahma as his father. But his position is much higher than Brahma. And as Prabhupada says, that Brahma is generally a very pious living entity, occupies the position of Brahma. But Lord Shiva's position can never be occupied by any living entity. So that is the unique position of Lord Shiva. But so although he is in such an exalted position, when he comes to this material world, he accepts a very humble position and a very humble service to render to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that service is to accept or be in charge of the mode of ignorance in this material world. And that is why we see Lord Shiva dressed up like this, what Sati is describing over here. His body is smeared with ashes, he is garlanded with human skulls, and he's always roaming around in the crematorium. and his entourage, like, you know, when a king comes, there's an entourage. But Lord Shiva's entourage is all ghosts, goblins, all those deformed creatures who are completely in the lower mode of nature. These are his associates. He associates with all these people. So why does he do this? He has an eternal position in Vaikuntha as Sadashiv. And he's the origin, he's one of the originators of this material world. He's assisting Mahavishnu in creating the Pradhan into Mahatattva and all. So why is he accepting this position? And Prabhupada explains, and the Acharyas explain, that Lord Shiva is Vaishnavanam Yathashambhu. He is the best among all devotees in this material universe. So he accepts that position of delivering people in the mode of ignorance. He accepts to be in charge of the mode of ignorance so that he can render this thankless service of delivering all those people who are in the lower modes of material nature. And this is one quality which is very dear to the Lord's heart. We see him mentioning that even in the Bhagavad Gita. And that is the quality of compassion. So Lord Shiva is the embodiment. He is the embodiment of this quality of compassion. And what is this quality of compassion? This quality of compassion is the willingness of a devotee of the Lord to sacrifice, you know, at great personal inconvenience, to render a service to the Lord for the upliftment of the Lord's fallen children. That is the mood of Lord Shiva. And that is what Sati is describing over here, that externally he dresses like this so that all the lower creatures like ghosts, goblins, all of them feel like associating with him. Now the ghost goblins, if for example Indra comes and he's dressed up very opulently like a demigod or the king of the demigods, the people that, you know, people who are in the lower modes, they will feel very hesitant to go and associate with Indra because they will feel, oh, how can we approach such a personality? He's the king of the demigods. Look at him, how he's dressed so nicely. But when they see Lord Shiva like this, dressed like them, you know, having skulls, ashes, matted hair, and behaving almost like a madman, roaming around in the crematorium, they don't feel hesitant. They feel that, yes, this is a person like us, and we can actually approach him. He's very approachable for people like us. So Lord Shiva puts on this external appearance so that these fallen living entities, the Lord's fallen children, don't feel hesitant in approaching him. That is the purpose why Lord Shiva dresses up like that. So his main purpose is because he has lots of compassion. He wants to render this thankless service to the Lord of delivering the fallen children to the Lord's lotus feet. And we see the same mood in Srila Prabhupada as well. Srila Prabhupada also, following in the footsteps of all these great Mahajans, Lord Shiva is one of the Mahajans. So following in the footsteps of these great Mahajans, keeping this quality of compassion in his heart, Srila Prabhupada also did this, what Lord Shiva was ready to do. He accepted great personal inconvenience just to come to the West and to deliver all the fallen children of the Lord and bring them back to the lotus feet of the Lord. So otherwise Srila Prabhupada could have, you know, easily lived in Vrindavan. We've heard that many times. But Srila Prabhupada, you know, traveled by a ship. He did not have any money. That was such an inconvenience for him at that advanced age of 70. He suffered some heart attacks. Again, another inconvenience which he accepted. He just traveled with 40 rupees. So he was almost penniless and going to the West. But the strong desire was on his heart to deliver those people in the West and bring them back to the lotus feet of the Lord. So this is why Lord Shiva also accepts this position of delivering all these ghosts, goblins and all these people. And that is why we see during the conversation which happened between Kashyapa Muni and Diti. Now this was there, I think, in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Diti feels very anxious. She is very anxious to have children. And her sister Aditi had lots of children. All the demigods were Aditi's children. And she did not have yet any children yet. So she is very anxious that I should also have children. I have been married for such a long time. So she approaches Kashyapa Muni for union, her husband. But she approaches him at the wrong time. That desire in her, that agitation came to her at the wrong time. It was actually Sandhya. Sandhya means the day was ending and evening or night was about to happen. So it was that twilight or that dusk time, the evening time when she approaches Kashyapa Muni. And Kashyapa Muni warns her. He says that this is not the right time for union. This is a very inauspicious time. And if we have union during this time, the children that you will get will not be very auspicious. But still she could not control her feelings. So she insists and Kashyapa Muni had to agree. And after that, Aditi has a conversation with Kashyapa Muni. And in that conversation, it is mentioned that Aditi is actually praying to Lord Shiva. She is saying that he is the husband of my sister. So, O Lord Shiva, let him be merciful to me. Because she knew that during that time of Sandhya, which is an inauspicious time, Lord Shiva is roaming around along with all his associates, the ghosts, goblins, people who don't have a body, who are still in their subtle bodies, the bhutas. And he is looking for appropriate wombs to then give that person who did not have a material body, entrance into that womb. So that is what is Lord Shiva's position. He is so merciful. He wants to deliver those bhutas and those living entities who don't have a proper body. So at that time he is roaming around and he sees that whoever is having union at an inauspicious time, he gives that womb, he allows those entities to enter that womb so that they can get a material body and then they have an opportunity to then render service and go back to the spiritual world. So Diti knew about this position of Lord Shiva, and that is why she was praying. So this is Lord Shiva's position. Out of compassion he does all these things as a service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we see this quality of compassion of Lord Shiva, which Lord Shiva has, of delivering all the fallen children. Throughout the Bhagavatam, we see so many examples of this. So we'll discuss one or two examples which glorify this position of Lord Shiva, of why he's dressing up like this, like Sati is saying. But despite all that, what is the main purpose in his heart of delivering the children of the Lord? So one of the examples that is given is of the demon Maya Danav. Now this demon Mayadana was a very powerful mystic. He was a yogi and he had lots of siddhis. And because of these siddhis, he had attacked the demigods. And the demigods had tried. He had come with a whole army of demons and asuras. And he was attacking the demigods and he had defeated the demigods completely. And the demigods kept actually fighting back. But whichever demons would die, Mayadana had a well of nectar. So he would just dip those demons in that well of nectar and they would become revived. And then they would again fight against the demigods. And to add fuel to fire, what Mayadanav had also done was he had created three formidable cities. And these cities could fly in the air because of his mystic powers. And these cities which could fly on the air were called as Tripura, because three cities. And the demigods could not conquer them at all because the cities were flying in the air, they would become invisible at times. So the demigods had become completely frustrated. So they approached Lord Narayan, and Lord Vishnu or Narayan, he has this quality of always giving credit to his devotees. So Lord Vishnu could have easily assisted the demigods in killing actually Mayadanav and destroying all those three cities. But he told them that you'll go to Lord Shiva. And he is the one who is going to help you all to combat this demon Mayadanav. So then they approach Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva then tells Parvati that, look, I have to go and help these demigods. They have been completely smashed by this Mayadanav demon. So let me go and help these demigods so that they are not in distress, because they are devotees of the Lord. So then he comes and with his trident, he destroys those three cities. The Tripura which Mayadanav had created. And that is why he is called as Tripurari as well. Because he was the only one who had the power to destroy these three cities. So that is the name by which he is now, you know, glorified in the world as Tripurari. Other example of Lord Shiva's compassion or his of his quality of Paradukha Dukhi. Having, you know, not being able to see the distress of other living entities. That is seen during the pastime of the churning of the milk ocean. Now when the demigods and the demons, under Lord Vishnu's instructions, they get together to churn the Mandara mountain and to extract nectar. Lord Vishnu tells them that if you churn the milk ocean, there will be nectar which will come out, and if you all drink that nectar, you all will become very powerful. So under the instructions of Lord Vishnu, the demigods and demons make a truce. And they start churning the milk ocean. Now in this particular pastime, Lord Vishnu had helped the demigods throughout, even the demons. First of all, he gave them this instruction that both of you make a truce so that you all can churn the ocean and take the nectar out which will make you powerful. And then he said use the Mandara mountain as the churning rod. So when the demigods and the demons went to pick the Mandara mountain, It was extremely heavy because it's a mountain made of solid gold. And they actually, the Mandara mountain fell from their hands and the milk ocean. Now when they had put the Mandara mountain in the milk ocean, the whole Mandara mountain sank because again it was made of gold and it was quite heavy. So again Vishnu came and he came in the famous avatar of Kurma and he lifted the Mandara mountain on his back and he allowed his back to be used as a platform for the churning to take place. And then we see that demigods and demons were using Vasuki as the churning rope. And there was lots of fire which was coming out from Vasuki's mouth, which was burning all the demigods and the demons. So again Lord Vishnu came and he showered some drops of rain, like cooling rain and nectar on all of them so that they don't get burnt. So in this way, at every stage, Lord Vishnu was helping them during this whole pastime of churning the milk ocean. So when the demigods started churning, there were lots of things which were coming out of the milk ocean. But the first thing and very poisonous thing which came out was a whole ocean of poison came out of the milk ocean. And that fumes from that ocean of poison started actually destroying all the living entities in the world. The demigods started feeling unconscious. Even the demons could not bear the fumes. They also started fainting. The living entities started losing their consciousness. So again the demigods approach Lord Vishnu and they tell him that we did not realize, but the first thing which has come out of this churning is all this poison. What should we do about this? Now we see, in this pastime Lord Vishnu had assisted them throughout. He actually assisted them carry the mountain. He took the form of Kurma and assisted them in using his back as a churning platform so that the Mandara mountain could be kept on his back. He again showered drops of nectar on them. So in this way, the Lord had assisted them throughout this pastime. So do we think the Lord did not have the power to even combat and drink up or destroy whatever poison, that ocean of poison had come out? Yes, he had the power. But Lord Vishnu again wanted to give credit to his devotees. Just as we see in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna that you are just nimitta matra. You are an instrument. I have already destined what should happen to all the Kaurava army. They are definitely going to die. But you please take the credit and you shoot and you fight with this army so you get the credit that you have won the war by fighting fair and square. So the Lord wants to give credit always to his devotees. And in this pastime of churning the milk ocean also, the Lord tells the demigods that y'all please approach Lord Shiva. He is the one who will be able to help you with this ocean of poison. So again the demigods and the demons approach Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva once again, you know, is having a conversation with Parvati before he comes to help the demigods. And he says that look at these demigods and demons. This whole ocean of poison which has come out of the churning is actually going to destroy the whole universe. So let me go and save these people. And that chapter is also entitled, it's in the 8th canto I believe, that chapter is also entitled Lord Shiva Saves the Universe by drinking the poison. So then Lord Shiva comes to the shore of the milk ocean and this whole ocean of poison which has generated, Lord Shiva has the power to make it small and take it into his palm. So he just makes the ocean into a palm full of poison and then he drinks that poison up. But the poison was so powerful that when it enters Lord Shiva's body, it actually leaves a blue mark in his throat. We see when a snake bites a person, how this body starts becoming blue because of the effects of poison. So in the same way, when Lord Shiva drinks the poison, his neck also becomes blue. And that is like a blemish of Lord Shiva. The Lord did not want this to be a blemish when his neck became blue. So the Lord wanted Lord Shiva to be glorified for this act which he had done out of sheer compassion for all these people. So now Lord Shiva is famous as Neelakantha. Neelakantha means one who is blue-necked, who drank this poison. So that is why Srila Prabhupada always says that when we see Lord Shiva, the followers of Lord Shiva, so-called followers in India, sometimes they imitate Lord Shiva and they also like to dress up like Lord Shiva. They have matted hair and they feel that Lord Shiva also drink ganja, like some intoxicants, and then Lord Shiva behaves like a madman. So they imitate the external activities of Lord Shiva, of dressing up like him, having matted hair and smearing ashes over their body and then smoking hashish or ganja or all these things, all these intoxicating substances. But Srila Prabhupada warns that if you want to imitate Lord Shiva, then imitate his activity as well of drinking the poison. Can people do that? So he always says that do that activity, then you can actually imitate Lord Shiva. But if you can't do that activity, then follow in the footsteps of Lord Shiva and follow the instructions which Lord Shiva is giving. Same way as Prabhupada warns in Krishna's Leela also. You know, people want to just follow Krishna's pastime of the dancing with the gopis. And many unscrupulous people then, you know, just collect some young unmarried girls and they say, oh, I'm in Krishna Bhav, I'll take you to Gopi Bhav. Let's have a Ras Leela. So there also Srila Prabhupada says that don't imitate Lord Krishna's activities. If you feel that he danced with gopis, so I should also dance with gopis, then he lifted the Govardhan Hill. Go and lift the Govardhan Hill first. If you have that capacity, then you can go and dance with the gopis. So this is how Prabhupada warns about Lord Shiva as well. That go and drink an ocean of poison. If you have that capacity, you can then, you know, imitate Lord Shiva's external activities of smearing ashes and drinking ganja and all these things. So this is Lord Shiva's position, that he is acting always out of compassion for the Lord's devotees and as a service to the Lord. He does all these activities as a service to the Lord. So Lord Shiva always wants the position of Lord Krishna or Lord Vishnu to be glorified. And Lord Vishnu always wants his devotees to be glorified. He always wants the credit to go to his devotees. And we see this in the pastime of Mohini Murti as well. So after the pastime of Mohini Murti is over, it happens in the churning of milk ocean pastime only. After that pastime, you know, the nectar has come out and the Lord has to take the form of a female, a very beautiful female, which is called as Mohini Murti, so that the demons don't drink up the nectar, and he then gives it to the demigods by tricking the demons. So after this pastime was over, Lord Shiva approaches Lord Vishnu and he says, he expresses that desire. He says that you showed that beautiful form of a woman to all the demigods and demons and I did not see that form. So I have this great desire to see your form of a woman. And Lord Vishnu warns him. He warns Lord Shiva that are you sure you want to see that form? It's a very bewildering form. And Shiva says yes, because Shiva is, you know, Lord Shiva is completely detached. If we see Lord Shiva, he is the husband of the goddess of fortune, of the original goddess of fortune. He is the husband of Durga. Durga is the generator of this entire material. She is the mother of this entire material world. So she has so much opulence. She has created all the opulence in this material world. But still we see Lord Shiva always living under a tree, under a banyan tree on the Kailash Parvat, just sitting on a deer skin. He doesn't have any possessions. We never see Lord Shiva sitting in a house or something like that. He doesn't have any possessions, completely detached. Even Lord, even Bhavani or Durga, if she wants to associate with Lord Shiva, she has to actually bring him out of his samadhi. He's all the time on samadhi, meditating on his worshipable deity, Sankarshan. So Lord Shiva is completely detached. So he thought that, how will that form bewilder me? So he says, yes, my Lord, I want to still see that form, even though you're saying it's bewildering. And suddenly Lord Vishnu disappeared from there. And Lord Shiva was actually there with Bhavani and all his associates were also there with him. And then far away in the forest where they were standing, Lord Shiva could suddenly see a very beautiful woman. And that forest was also very intoxicating. It had beautiful ambience, very nice flowers, fragrance, all that was there. And then he suddenly sees this beautiful woman and she was playing with a ball. And she was bouncing the ball up and down and she was like running around with the ball. And all the delicate parts of her body were also bouncing. They were moving here and there and her clothes were flying because of the breeze. And when Lord Shiva sees this woman, he completely gets bewildered. And lusty desires actually arise in his heart when he sees this beautiful woman. And he starts running after this woman. And the woman keeps running. Somehow Lord Shiva is not able to catch the woman. The woman keeps running away from Lord Shiva. She's still bouncing the ball. And then suddenly there's a great gust of wind comes. In the Bhagavatam it's described. And the woman's belt becomes loosened and her clothes get scattered. And she is now almost naked, standing naked in front of Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva gets so aroused that his semen actually drops in various places. But still he's running behind this woman. And it is described that before that happens, the woman takes him through different hermitages of sadhus who are actually sitting and meditating. And these sadhus are followers or disciples of Lord Shiva himself. But Lord Shiva is shamelessly running behind this woman. Even though his wife was there next to him, Bhavani was present, all his disciples were present, and the woman is deliberately taking him through the hermitages of the sadhus, who are followers of Lord Shiva and who are deep in meditation of how they should also become detached. And now they are suddenly seeing their master running behind a woman shamelessly just to obtain her. So all this Lord, like obviously this is Mohini Murthy, Vishnu's form of Mohini Murthy. So all this the Lord is, you know, making Lord Shiva do of running behind him. And then ultimately Lord Shiva's semen drops in various places when he sees that naked form of that woman. And once his semen has dropped, he becomes very sober. And then he sits down and he starts introspecting. And he realizes that yes, no one could have done this to me except the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then Lord Vishnu takes his original form back and the Lord says, so at that time the purport explains, Prabhupada says that there is very important lesson for all of us to learn from that pastime. So what was Lord Shiva ashamed after that whole pastime happened? It is described that no, Lord Shiva was not ashamed. When he was contemplating that why this happened to him, why these lusty desires came and why his semen dropped like that, Lord Shiva then realized that it is only the Supreme Personality of Godhead's bewildering potency which can bring about this quality in Lord Shiva of becoming lusty. And at that time he feels very proud actually. He feels that it is only the Lord who can bring this, you know, do this to even a person like me who claims to be always detached. So this is the glory of my Lord, that how his bewildering potency can actually, you know, do this to all living entities. So he feels that this is an opportunity to once again glorify Lord Vishnu. He is not seeing as a shame, you know, a shameful act that he had performed. So Lord Vishnu is setting an example that, you know, in front of all his disciples, he actually made Lord Shiva do this. So then what are we? We are ordinary living entities who can get any time bewildered by this bewildering potency or by the Maya potency of Lord Vishnu. So this is the lesson we learn, that Lord Shiva all wanted to glorify the position of Lord Vishnu, that it is only his bewildering potency which has this power to bring this change in him and to bring about these lusty desires in him. So the Lord is always eager to glorify his devotees and give credit to his devotees, like we saw in the Maya Dano pastime and the churning of the milk ocean pastime. And the devotee is always eager to give the credits to his Lord, like we see Lord Shiva doing in the Mohini Murthy pastime, glorifying his supreme position. So we see that even when Lord Shiva came as Advaita Acharya, we will talk about a few aspects in Chaitanya Charitamrita, how the Lord and his devotees reciprocate with each other and each wants the other to be glorified. So when Lord Shiva, he came as Advaita Acharya in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastime, he also wanted Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's unique position as the master of the whole world to be glorified. And he always used to try and render service to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in that mood, that he is my master and I have to render service to him. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would never accept service from Advaita Acharya, because Advaita Acharya was the god brother of his Guru Maharaj. So he was almost like his guru. Plus he was a very elderly Vaishnava. So whenever Advaita Acharya used to try and render service to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would never allow him to do that. He would never allow Advaita Acharya to touch his feet or do any other kind of service to him. In fact, he would take every opportunity to serve Advaita Acharya. That was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mood. So then Advaita Acharya wanted that, no, I really need this opportunity to serve Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and to show to the whole world that he is my master as well. He wanted to glorify that position. So Advaita Acharya then thought of a very good technique or a trick. So he started preaching Mayavad philosophy. He had a great, like a big group of followers, of disciples. So he started teaching, suddenly he started teaching Mayavad philosophy to all these disciples. Now Advaita Acharya is the one who had actually invited Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Lord Krishna to appear in this world, to save the fallen people through his prayers. His prayers were so loud that they pierced all the coverings of the universe and they reached Krishna's ears. And he descended in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to save the fallen people of Kali Yuga through the process of Bhakti Yoga. So Advaita Acharya is the foremost person who actually, you know, wanted this Bhakti Yoga process to be elaborated in this world. And now he is teaching Mayavad philosophy suddenly to his disciples. And once Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityanand Prabhu and Haridas Thakur, they came to Shantipur to visit Advaita Acharya's house. And over there they saw, Advaita Acharya saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu coming. So all the more loudly he started preaching Mayavad philosophy. And we know how much Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was against Mayavad philosophy. He always used to say that it destroys, one should never hear because it will destroy your bhakti completely. So he saw, he was very shocked to see that Advaita Acharya is preaching Mayavad philosophy. And Advaita Acharya kept preaching loudly, even though Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had arrived at his house. And this boiled Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's anger. He became so angry that he took Advaita Acharya by his hand and he started beating him. Beating and kicking him. Now there's a whole assembly of disciples who are present over there. Advaita Acharya's wife is present. Mother Sita Thakurani is present over there. Now usually husbands don't like to be embarrassed in front of their wives. They have that male ego. Especially they don't like to be beaten up in front of their wives. But again, like we see in the case of Lord Shiva, he was ready to be embarrassed in front of all his disciples by running behind Mohini Murthy. In the same way, Advaita Acharya did not mind being embarrassed in front of all his disciples. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu kept beating him, that how are you preaching this Mayavad philosophy? And Advaita Acharya was just smiling. And he said that now you have accepted me as your servant, my lord. That was the whole purpose why I was doing this. Because you were never allowing me to render any service to you. But only a master beats up his servant. If the servant does something wrong, the master has the right to beat up his servant and to correct his servant. And that is what you have done today. So by beating me up, you have accepted my position as being your servant and you being my master. So that is how Advaita Acharya wanted to glorify Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's position. And further in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving credit to Ramanand Rai. So when he is having this samvad with Ramanand Rai, there is a famous conversation which happens between Ramanand Rai and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And at that time when Ramanand Rai is speaking eloquent words and eloquent aspects about Bhakti Yoga, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is glorifying Ramanand Rai as if he has 10 mouths. And he's saying, today you have clarified so many doubts I had in my heart. You have spoken the highest truth today. So in this way he's speaking volumes and volumes of praises about Ramanand Rai. And Ramanand Rai is again giving the credit back to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's saying that, my lord, what am I? I am nothing but a puppet in your hands. You are making me dance as you want and you are making me speak. So it is you who is putting these words in my mouth. You already know the truth. You are the absolute truth. So what is hidden from you? But you are making me speak these words. So you are making my tongue vibrate. You are that expert veena player who is stringing the strings of the veena. So my tongue is the string of the veena. And you are stringing, you are playing that expert veena by making my tongue vibrate in the way that you want. You are the musician and I'm just a puppet. I'm just that veena or the strings of the veena in your hand. So this is how both are glorifying each other. And further in the Chaitanya Charitamrita we see, when Vallabha Bhatt comes to visit Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he actually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is sitting and glorifying all his disciples to Vallabha Bhatt. He's saying that actually I was completely in ignorance. My mind was completely impure. But it is this by association of Advaita Acharya. I was completely lost in, you know, teaching grammar. My whole childhood and youth went in just, you know, logic, debates, how to establish a scholarship in Sanskrit and grammar. My life was wasted like that. But it is this Advaita Acharya by whose association my impure mind became pure. So he is giving a credit again to Advaita Acharya. And then he is saying that what did I know? I am a Mayavadi sannyasi. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas from a Mayavadi. So he is saying, I am a Mayavadi sannyasi. What do I know about the tenets of Bhakti Yoga? But it is Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya who actually enlightened my mind and who told me and who elaborated about the tenets of Bhakti Yoga. And he actually is the one who gave me realizations that yes, Bhakti Yoga is the best. Otherwise, I was just a foolish Mayavadi sannyasi. In this way, he is glorifying Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And then he is glorifying Ramanand Rai. He is saying that what did I know about Rasa Tattva? I was a completely fool and an ignorant. I did not know anything about any high pastimes of Lord Krishna. But it is this Ramanand Rai who actually elucidated about Rasa Tattva to me. And that is how I came to know about these pastimes of Lord Krishna. So in this way, he is glorifying all his devotees. He is glorifying Advaita Acharya for purifying his impure mind. He is glorifying Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya for giving him the knowledge about Bhakti Yoga, even though he was completely into Mayavad. That's what he is saying. Then he is glorifying Ramanand Rai. And he is saying that he is the one who actually taught me about Rasatattva, about the higher pastimes of Lord Krishna. And then he is further telling Vallabha Bhatt, he is saying that what do I know about the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra? Now this is the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaking, who is actually Yuga Avatar, who came to establish the holy names and chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. He is saying that I did not know anything about chanting of the holy names, but it is this Haridas Thakur who actually showed me the depths and what is the importance of chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So it is only because of Haridas Thakur that I am able to today chant the holy names of the Lord. Because he has so much realizations and he has so much faith, and that is what he imparted unto me. Otherwise, I did not know anything about chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So this is how the Lord is always trying to give credit to his devotees, and the devotees of the Lord are always trying to give credit to him. So, coming back to Lord Shiva, so we see in the Mohini Murti pastime that Lord Shiva did that whole pastime of, shamelessly running behind Mohini Murti just to give credit to the exalted position of Lord Vishnu, that his bewildering potency can bewilder anybody. So Lord Shiva is actually Ashutosh. He is the one who gives benedictions very easily, like we see in the Bhasmasura or Vikrasura pastime. He gives the benediction very easily to him that, he wanted the benediction that whoever's head I touch, their head should crack to thousands and thousands of pieces. And Lord Shiva just easily gave the benediction to him. And then Lord Vishnu came and saved the situation. So Lord Shiva is Ashutosh. Ashutosh means one who is quickly pleased. So anybody who approaches Lord Shiva with material desires and tells him that, oh Lord Shiva, that I want this material desire, I want wealth, I want health, I want this, I want good wife, Lord Shiva immediately gets pleased with little bit worship that those people offer, and he grants those material desires for that person. And therefore in the Krishna book also Prabhupada says that Lord Shiva's followers are usually very rich, but Lord Shiva is very poor. He lives in absolute detached condition, in absolute poverty. He doesn't even have a house. So followers of Lord Shiva are very rich, because Lord Shiva just gives that blessing easily to them. But followers of Lord Krishna are all usually very poor, and Lord Krishna himself lives in very opulent conditions. So this contrast is there between Lord Shiva and Lord Krishna, and it's explained by Prabhupada in the Krishna book. So Lord Krishna, why is this difference there? Because Shiva is Ashutosh, he likes to please his devotees. And Lord Krishna does not give what we need, does not give what we ask for. He always gives us what is right for us and what is good for our spiritual emancipation. But in the same way, Lord Shiva also, because he is an exalted servant, a devotee of Lord Krishna, people who approach him with the right consciousness and the right mood, he does not give them material desires. He actually satisfies their spiritual desires. And we see that in the Bhagavatam, during the pastime of Prachetas. So the Prachetas have just come out of the water. They were meditating there, and then they meet Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva then elaborates so many aspects. He preaches to them about Bhakti Yoga. And he preaches to them about the exalted position of Lord Krishna, and how the devotional service unto Lord Krishna is the best path of liberation. So that whole song is there, it's called Shiva Gita, and it is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam, of how Lord Shiva preaches to the Prachetas. So we see that whoever asks Lord Shiva for spiritual benedictions, he is very happy to then lead them on the path of bhakti towards the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. But people who ask for material benedictions, and especially people who are in the lower modes of nature, whom Lord Shiva has come to deliver out of his compassion, then he very easily satisfies their desires. He arranges for different wombs for them so that they can get a material body, or he arranges some wealth or opulences for them. So this is the position of Lord Shiva. Although he is externally dressing up like this, with ashes and crematorium, roaming around crematorium, matted hair, human skulls garland, that whole external appearance is only to attract the lower entities to him, so that he can then deliver them and he can do this thankless service to Lord Krishna. So we'll end the class here, and we'll see if there are any questions, comments or corrections. Yes, Guruji. Thank you. I checked the calendar, it's nothing.
I hear from Bhagavatam that Lord Brahma accepts the flowers which are given to Lord Shiva. So how is that? How do you explain that? Lord Brahma honors the flowers which are put on the feet of Lord Shiva.
Yes, that is there in this purport as well. So it's a literary meaning. So we take the meaning in context that Lord Brahma actually recognizes the exalted position of Lord Shiva. So he does not go by the external appearance. So as it is said in English, it takes one to realize one. So unless you are not exalted, you will not be able to realize the exalted position of somebody else. So Daksha was in a very material consciousness. He was extremely proud, envious. That is why he could not recognize the exalted position of Lord Shiva. But Lord Brahma is a very, he's obviously the creator of the universe. So he's a very exalted, he's in a very exalted position. And he is able to recognize the exalted position of Lord Shiva. So the meaning in context is that he is accepting that Lord Shiva is an exalted position. He has his own tattva, Shiva tattva. And this external appearance which is there is only for in service of Lord Vishnu, because he has accepted to be in charge of the mode of dark, ignorance. So in that context, that is how we understand that he respects Lord Shiva's position.
Well, from this question, another question arises. Why did he get up when Daksha was angry? Lord Shiva did not stand, but Brahma was able to stand. But why did you object to Daksha at that time? Explain that why you are chastising a great devotee like Lord Shiva.
Why he didn't object?
Why didn't he stand up and tell the whole audience?
Huh.
Because Daksha insulted Lord Shiva and the whole audience.
I don't remember the entire pastime, Prabhuji. We studied it a long time ago. But I think Lord Brahma leaves after that, if I'm not wrong. I don't remember the pastime. He didn't object at that time. And maybe one of the reasons we can understand is that because the pastime had to unfold about how the exalted position of Lord Shiva had to be established through the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. Also the lessons that we learn, don't judge somebody by their external appearance. Vaishnavapraj is the greatest offense. So all these pastimes and lessons had to unfold. Maybe that is why Lord Brahma did not put an end to the pastime there and there itself. But I don't remember. I believe he got up and left or something like that after that pastime. I don't remember. Does anybody else know? Jainita Prabhu, do you know? Aditi Mataji, any of you know what happened?
So what you are saying is that it's the arrangement of Lord,
yes,
Lord Krishna
to teach us many lessons. Yeah.
Thank you.
Today Mayavad is in the region. This is a very prominent. Now the Bhakti is not so prominent compared to them. So how do we see Lord Shiva in compared as
So Prabhu's question is that nowadays Mayavad philosophy is very prominent in the world. In fact, it is more prominent than Bhakti. And it is Lord Shiva who actually came as Shankaracharya and who started the whole Mayavad philosophy in the world. So how do we understand that it's an act of compassion when we see Mayavad philosophy is taking over? Am I right, Prabhuji? So it is mentioned in the Bhagavatam that Lord Shiva actually, when he's talking to Parvati, he says that to render a service to Lord Krishna, I'm going to incarnate in Kali Yuga and I'm going to establish a philosophy which is Advaita philosophy, or which is, you know, philosophy of non-dualism. And I believe over there the purport explains, and Acharyas have also explained, that Lord Krishna specifically instructs Lord Shiva to do this service of coming as Shankaracharya and spreading the Mayavad philosophy, because he wanted to keep the Vaishnav culture or the Vaishnav philosophy very pristine. So people who don't have faith anyway, and in Kali Yuga there are lots and lots of faithless people, because it's Kali Yuga going on. That is the nature of this age. So there are lots and lots of faithless people in this age, And Lord Krishna did not want the devotees of the Lord or the devotional cult of the Lord to be contaminated by these faithless people trying to, you know, come inside or something like that. So that is why he instructs Lord Shiva that you create a whole upper sampradaya, it's called, or you create a whole sampradaya of Mayavad, so that all these people who don't have faith in me or my lotus feet or my existence, they all can be redirected towards that sampradaya or that philosophy, so that devotees then can attract people who are genuinely interested, and that whole culture can remain very pristine and pure. It will not be then contaminated by these people who are anyway not interested in or having faith in the existence of the Supreme Lord. So from that purpose, it is explained by Acharyas that Lord Shiva does that service of coming down as Shankaracharya. But even towards the end of his own life, Shankaracharya, we know, has composed the song Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam. So he himself was a covered personalist. But because he wanted to keep those people away who did not have, you know, a faith that the Lord exists in a personal form, he wanted to keep all of them away, and that is why he started that upper sampradaya. That is my understanding, Prabhuji. You want to add anything to that, Prabhuji?
Seems like they are doomed anyway by following
Mayavad
philosophy.
Yes.
So majority of people are doomed.
Yes, but we also see one of the offenses is not to preach to faithless people. So that is one of the offenses as well, if we go and preach to the faithless people. And that is why we try to spread, like to increase their Agyata Sukriti by, you know, Harinams that we do, holy names going into their ears, prasadam distribution. So that not in this lifetime, but in the future lifetimes, they will definitely get to come closer to the lotus feet of Krishna.
You are absolutely right, because Lord Shankaracharya said, Govindam, 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 Murmati. You are foolish if you don't remember Krishna.
Thank you, Prabhu. Any other questions or comments? Okay, we'll end the class here. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.